Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
From the Society for Nautical Research, in partnership with Lloyd's Register Foundation, I'm Sam Willis, and this is the Mariner's Mirror podcast. The world's number one podcast dedicated to all of maritime history.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Mariner's Mirror podcast and to this, our third episode on the maritime history of Sweden. So far we've heard about Sweden's naval history from 1500 to the present day, how Vikings from the land that would become Sweden travelled to the east. And today we're going on a tour of Sweden's brilliant National Maritime Museum in Stockholm, and we're in the capable hands of Jonas Hedberg, curator of the museum. I was there filming for Lloyd's Register's fantastic project Maritime Innovation in Miniature, filming the world's best ship models with the latest camera equipment. So if you want to see some of their most remarkable objects in jaw-dropping high definition, then be sure to check that out. Just Google Maritime Innovation in Miniature. In between filming, Jonas took me on a tour. As ever, I hope you enjoy listening to him as much as I enjoyed talking with him. Here is the brilliant Jonas. So I'm standing in the ship model gallery of the Swedish National Maritime Museum, and I'm with Jonas. First of all, can you just tell us a bit about this museum? Because I believe it was purpose-built as a maritime museum, which makes it quite unusual.
It was indeed, yeah. There's a bit of a convoluted story, because this museum is basically an amalgamation of two previous museums, which was a maritime museum and the state collection, the state naval collections. Mm-hmm. So there was a more civilian side and a purely naval collection, which were amalgamated in the 1930s. And this museum was built in 1935, 1936, and then opened in 1938, because it took them some time to get everything in order.
Yeah, it's a beautiful shape, and I believe it's the shape of an anchor. Is that the reason it is curved, or is that has a maritime historian imposed that on the design in the past?
There's an interesting story to that as well, because this building was built with the help of donations from wealthy financiers, and they'd donated money to the Science Museum a couple of years previously, which was built in a sort of very functionalist, almost brutalist style, which these donors absolutely hated. And so the prerequisite for gifting any money to this project was no modernism. So this is kind of a throwback to a neoclassicist style, which was common in Sweden in the late 1700s, early 1800s. It's a very beautiful building.
It's newer than it looks.
Exactly.
And we're here because we're filming for the Lloyd's Register Foundation's Maritime Innovation in Miniature project, and we've been downstairs in the photo studio filming some of your wonderful models. Now we've come up to the model gallery because
We've been restricted in the models we can film by their size and by the fact there are some in display. And you need to come here to just appreciate how seriously massive some of these models are. Now, we've recently spoken about Chapman as an important designer. So let's just have a look at this one here. Let's describe what we're looking at.
Yeah, this is the type of vessel which Chapman designed in the 1760s and 1770s, and they were later known as archipelago frigates. And this is a hybrid ship. It has three masts. It's not a very good sailer. The main means of propulsion is oars.
Yeah, and the model we're looking at, right, is a beautiful kind of auburn coloured timber vessel. It's got guns on one deck, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 on each side. So a 20-gun, large guns, smaller guns above it. And then it's got, we just count these oars, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It must be 20 oars on each side. Yeah. Each oar has got four men on it, and they've all recreated on a model. So you must have, I don't know, 80? But I've got that completely wrong. 160 rowers were looking.
Yeah, and that was one of the big advantages of this type of vessel. It was that you could get by with a smaller crew than you could with the galleys.
Right.
Because the galleys, they could have something like 250 oarsmen.
Wow.
Who were horribly exposed to enemy fire.
Yeah.
And so this was a bit more compact and efficient, and they was partly very forward thinking and partly very inspired by older types.
Yeah, so like, I mean, this is 1780, late 1770s.
This ship, which was called the Lodbrok, which is all these ships had names which were meant to evoke Viking romanticism.
Okay.
So if you watch any of these Viking TV series, you might recall the name Lofbrok.
Yeah.
And it's the same, Lodbrok.
Oh, I see. That's fascinating. I mean, visually, it looks like a mixture between an 18th century frigate with 180 people on board and a kind of 16th, 15th century Mediterranean galley. Almost looks like a Venetian or Genoese galley.
Yes, indeed. And Maltese galleys were a big inspiration for the Swedish Navy throughout the 18th century and even before that. So this type was called the Turuma, which is a Finnish province because Finland belonged to Sweden at that point. Mm. It was an integrated part of the Swedish Empire. They sort of underperformed in battle because they weren't as mobile as it was hoped they would be.
Yeah.
But they had devastating firepower. You see, these cannon, they were all first 24 pounders,
right,
and later they had even 36 pounders in some cases. So the broadside was absolutely devastating against Russian galleys, which were very lightly armed.
So this was built for the Russo-Swedish War in the 1780s. Let's have a look at some of the other artifacts, because there's a behind us is a rather menacing lion who's also looks slightly camp because he's got a crown on his head. What are we looking at here?
Yeah, looks slightly deranged, and it's most likely not from a naval vessel, but from an East Indiaman.
Okay.
The same type of figurehead was.
Let's describe it for our listeners: a carved oak, I suspect,
yes,
a figurehead of a lion who's got his claws out and a very elaborate crown. What sort of period is this?
This would have been the mid 1700s. We don't have an exact date for this, but this type of figurehead would have been common from the late 1600s and probably until the mid 1700s, when the sort of iconography began to change. So this rampant, raging lion is a very recurring common motive.
Yeah, yeah. And further up here, we've got another a wonderful piece of carving from a vessel. So we're walking up through a corridor of ship models,
yes.
A maze of ship models. There's another cracker.
This is one of our permanent exhibitions. It's called Battle Stations, and it tells the story of Swedish naval history from about 1650 right up until this very day.
Yeah. I mean, off the top of my head, there are 50 models in this room?
Something like that, yes.
Yeah, and one of the largest is just behind us there, and it's got to, the masts have got to be 8-9 feet high. This very large one at the back. Let's just go and have a look at this one, actually, while we're doing that.
So this is one of Chapman's ships of the line. Fairly small by the standards of the day, and certainly by French or British standards. But the Baltic is fairly shallow.
Yeah.
And you couldn't have a draft that was excessive. So you had to build fairly small two-deckers and sort of standard in the Swedish Navy became 60 gunships,
yeah.
60, 64. And this was a standard type of ship of line that Chapman designed around 1780. And they built 10 of these in only 3 years at the naval yard in Karlskrona,
right.
In the south of Sweden.
And this model, it's a scale of 1 to 16. So, it's
absolutely massive.
It's absolutely, it's towering above us. But it's wonderful, isn't it? Because it allows you to really get up close. It's not quite as miniature as some of them. Now, let's just go around here and look at this piece of timber carving, because a little further along the gallery from the rampant, raging lion, we have this fellow. Here we are. Who's this guy?
This guy is Charles the 11th, who was a one of a sort of portal figures in Swedish 17th century history. He was the father of Charles the 12th,
yeah,
and a more successful king in many ways, because he expanded the Swedish Empire and consolidated it. And this is a piece from the stern.
So it's from the stern of a big warship.
Yes.
Yeah, the Carolus the 11th, built one of the last ships built at the naval shipyard in Stockholm, and it gives you a sense of the colour. So what we're looking at here is, again, it's enormous. We've got a very handsome. Gosh, he has got wonderful hair, hasn't he? This is the king astride a horse which is leaping up, it's balancing on its hind legs.
Yeah.
And coloured, it would have been so bright, wouldn't it?
It would have been radiant. And I love his hair and his moustache. He kind of looks like one of these British heavy metal bands from the late
70s. 1972.
Yeah.
He would have fitted in absolutely brilliantly.
But the ship was the largest ship in the Swedish Navy at the time. It was designed by Robert Turner, who was an English shipwright and was recruited by the Swedish Crown to help kickstart Swedish naval construction.
Mm.
So, by Swedish standards, it was quite large. It had 82 cannons, which was very rarely built larger ships like that in any of the Baltic navies.
Mm. Well, wonderful stuff. Let's now walk through to different parts of the museum. Because one of the wonderful things that you guys have is a collection dedicated to refugees, to migrants, to people travelling across the Baltic, which I think is a very modern story, a wonderful story. And now, just up here, there is not a model of a boat, an actual boat, which I believe was used by people escaping to Sweden after the Second World War.
Yes, indeed. This boat was used by Estonian refugees who fled Estonia around 1944,
yeah,
as the Red Army was advancing westwards. And all the Baltic countries had been a war zone for a number of years by then, obviously, and they'd had enough and gambled to get across the Baltic in this very small craft often. And this must have been a very, very hazardous,
yeah,
journey.
Let's describe the vessel for our listeners. So, 12 feet long?
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah, clinker-built wooden ship. There's one bench left. Wooden boat, I should say, not a ship. Pretty exhausted and tired. Yeah. How has this survived?
It ended up in the naval yard in Karlskrona as a work boat, more or less, and was gifted to us a few years back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Now, what I think makes this such a powerful symbol of fear, but also a hope for a new life, are the all of the artifacts that you've got about refugees fleeing. There's some clothing here we're looking at, and there's a wonderful, wonderful piece here. This is it's the saddest looking teddy bear you've ever seen in your entire life. He's missing an ear. He's got a bandage over his head because he's missing an eye. So he looks like a wounded soldier. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this sad looking teddy bear belonged to a 7-year-old Estonian girl called Ulvi. And it was taken from her when the family arrived in Sweden, because everything, all of their belongings and themselves as well, had to be disinfected.
Mm.
But eventually she got the teddy bear back.
Nice.
And now it's on display here.
Wow.
It's very touching.
Isn't it? Let's talk about some of these other artifacts you've got here.
Yeah. Yeah, so this book, for example, is called 20 Years of Independence, meaning Estonian independence. It was published in 1939 because all the Baltic states had been independent for only a couple of decades when the war broke out. And this newfound sense of identity was very, very precious to the Estonians and the Latvians and the Lithuanians, and was taken away from them shortly afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
and they were subject to Soviet rule for 50 years.
Mm.
From around 1940 to 89-90. So this also a very touching reminder of people trying to hang on to their their heritage.
Yeah. And also learning new. I think it's fascinating here. So Otto Tammer Tilt's father brought a Swedish-Estonian dictionary with him. When he arrived in Sweden, he often sat in cafes at the refugee camp and practiced his Swedish using the dictionary.
Yeah, and the notable thing about many of these Baltic refugees that they were very adamant many times that they would learn Swedish as quickly as possible, find work. Mm. Many of them worked as craftsmen and boat builders.
Yeah.
So they were really, after only a decade or so, they were really integrated in Swedish society.
Wonderful. Now, let's walk along here because you've got another of my favourite exhibits of this brilliant museum. We're going to go to the smoking lounge of a 19th century rail ferry. So here we go. Now, can we get in here? Let's have a look. Jonas has the keys. There we go. We're in.
Pause.
Oh, this is fabulous. So in we go. And we are in a oak, I think this is oak, it might be mahogany, oak panelled maybe, oak panelled room, very close, very dark. And this is the actual smoking lounge of this rail ferry. How tell me about the vessel to begin with.
It is indeed. Welcome aboard. And it's from a railway ferry called the Queen Victoria, Drottning Victoria in Swedish, who was the Swedish queen at the time. And the ship was launched in 1909 in Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't. She operated between Trelleborg in the south of Sweden,
yep,
and Sassnitz,
okay,
which is northeast Germany.
Right. And let's explain what a rail ferry is for those of our listeners who don't know. It's a vessel upon which you drive a train. And then that gets you across the sea, and then it gets loaded again onto the railway of the next country that you arrive in. And I was reading about this vessel, and I think it was 165 metres of
track.
Yeah, on board. And there are two tracks.
Yeah.
And so there's space for 16 to 18 carriages, I believe.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the main link between Sweden and the continent until, well, fairly late.
Really? Yeah.
So when war broke out in 1939, the ship was hastily rebuilt and served as a mine layer.
Right.
For the Swedish Navy.
Yeah.
But she was handed back to the Swedish National Railways in 1945 and went on to serve for a couple of decades. Was okay. Broken up in the late 60s.
But some genius saved the smoking lounge.
Yes.
It's now a non-smoking lounge, we should say.
Well, sadly, yes.
That's what I'd like to sit down with a pipe and a cigar, though.
It's a fascinating atmosphere just to sit here, but there's a slight list.
It is. It's wonky. It makes me feel a bit seasick.
Yes, me too. And apparently when they tried to piece everything back together, because it had been in storage for some decades, nothing seemed to fit until they sort of...
Wonked it
by about 1 degree, and then everything fit like a glove.
Oh, suddenly. Wow.
So,
and we know that there was a very famous passenger on this vessel.
Yes. It's a very familiar name. And his name was Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, who was sent to Russia in the spring of 1917 by the German government. And the idea was that he would sneak into Russia via Sweden,
right,
Finland, and create havoc,
yeah,
and chaos, because Russia and Germany were still at war at that point.
And the Germans wanted to foment chaos within Russia by injecting Lenin in.
They did indeed, and they succeeded beyond their wildest expectations, one would guess. Careful what you wish for.
Yes, I'm putting Lenin anywhere is going to cause some kind of chaos. It's fascinating thinking that he was actually in this room and looked around this and enjoyed the views. Well, it's a really fabulous place. But this isn't the only interior of a vessel you have in this museum. I think we should go and find the other one because that's very special indeed.
Yeah.
Let's go and see what we can find. So we're walking back out of the smoking lounge now. We're going to go through the galleries, and I'm very proud to say that opposite me are two completely empty ship model cabinets. I'm just going to lock the door. And these ship model cabinets are two of your finest models, and they're downstairs in the studio being filmed by our film crew at the present. So if you want to see what we've been filming here, do please check out the Maritime Innovation in Miniature project. Just Google Maritime Innovation in Miniature and it will take you to the Lloyd's Register Foundation's History and Education Centre's website, where you can enjoy the extraordinary footage we are creating of the world's best ship models, and a wonderful behind-the-scenes film as well, where you can have a little tour around the museum and see what we're up to. So we're now walking back through the main hallway of the museum, and yet again, there are two enormous ship models either side of me, and again, I assume that's 1 in 16 scale, so a mast approaching 9, 10 feet. Anyway, in front of me is, well, it is the hugely elaborate gilded stern of an 18th century Swedish royal yacht.
That's right. She was called the Amphion, and she was built in 1778 for King Gustav III of Sweden, who was a Francophile and loved theatre and the arts.
Yeah.
And also started a war against Russia in 1788.
I think he was a bit of a show-off.
He was.
An aggressive show-off. He decided, as King of Sweden, he'd start a war against the Russians.
It was time for a turf war.
Yeah, definitely. And so built this. Now, it's got quite an interesting history. So it was designed by our old friend Chapman, we've spoken about before, this genius shipbuilder and ship designer. However, this was an absolute pig. He got this one wrong, didn't he?
Yeah. The ubiquitous Mr. Chapman was a royal favourite.
Yeah.
And he was entrusted with designing this royal yacht. And she was an abysmal sailor.
To the point of danger, we should add.
To the point of danger. Not only once, but several times, things almost ended up very, very badly.
Yeah.
And this didn't really deter the king from using the ship. He was perfectly happy.
He sounds like a character, old Gustav.
Yeah. Not sure what his points of reference were when it came to sailing ships, but
maybe he didn't care how it sailed, he just cared what it looked like. I mean, that's what the impression you get from this. I'm not surprised it didn't sail well with this stuck on the back.
Well, I would guess he would have cared more about the elaborate interior, which is really beautiful.
Yep, and it actually survives. Let's go and have a quick look at it. So the remarkable thing about this, we're now walking kind of past the stern windows into a section of the museum where they have, well, recreation is completely the wrong word because it's not a recreation, it's the actual thing. Before this vessel was broken up, they saved the king's cabin.
Yes. The ship was broken up in the late 1800s, but there was a group of naval officers who intervened to save this lavishly crafted interior.
Right, let's describe it. So, there are painted panels on the walls of cherubs sitting on clouds. There are gilded, carved pillars either side of it. There's a cupola, I think is the word, you know, a circular thing in the ceiling, again, elaborately carved with gilt work everywhere. I mean, it is just a mind-blowing space, isn't it?
Yeah, and this would have been the only part of the ship where it was bearable at all to spend any length of time, because the rest of the ship was really overcrowded, which is very funnily described in a number of memoirs from the period of, by courtiers and obviously the crew, and they were packed like sardines.
Really?
But the king had his, of course, he had his own space and didn't have to care about the trivial stuff.
That must have been extraordinary, walking out of the cabin to see hundreds of people on deck, and then you come into this glorious, quiet, gilded cabin.
Yes. And the war which Gustav started against Russia in 1788 didn't... really wasn't a success story. The war went pretty badly for Sweden. Mm-hmm. Because neither the army nor the navy were adequately prepared, really. It was quite a bit of wishful thinking from the king's side. And they were, in 1790, they were pretty close to defeat. And the navy had been locked in by the Russians. They managed to break out with heavy casualties. Mm. But as a sort of last-ditch effort to stop the Russians, the king decided that the archipelago navy, mainly oared vessels, would meet the Russians in battle at a place called Svensksund, mm-hmm. which is on the south coast of Finland. And and this at this very table, here's where he made the decision and had a council of war.
Really? With success?
Yes, that was actually a resounding success, and the Russian forces were almost annihilated very unexpectedly.
Yeah.
So that's the single greatest Swedish victory, and the greatest naval victory of the 18th century.
Did it sate Gustav's desire to be aggressive? Did he just decide to give it a rest after all of that?
It was a handy excuse to start peace negotiations.
He'd made his point, I think.
Yeah, and nothing was gained, nothing was lost. But the war had bred such resentment against the king that he was assassinated 2 years afterwards.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating story. Thank you very much indeed for our little tour.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much for listening. Now, do please make sure that you leave us a review on whatever app that you are listening on, especially if you're listening on iTunes. We'll read out any review that you leave. It's hugely important. It helps us climb the rankings, and that allows more people to find us, which means we can help more people understand the importance of maritime history. We've got a fantastic YouTube channel with some really remarkable videos on it. Most recently, the animation of a cutaway of a 17th century first-rate man of war from around the time of the Great Fire of London. The video explains everything that's going on inside the ship, particularly looking at the innovative technology from the period. The podcast comes from both the Society for Nautical Research and the Lloyd's Register Foundation, so please make sure you do everything in your power to check out what those brilliant institutions are up to. In particular, please check out Maritime Innovation in Miniature, that project I mentioned at the beginning, filming the world's best ship models. And please, please join the Society for Nautical Research. You can do so at snr.org.uk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.